You're listening to How to Succeed in Evil, the novel, written and performed by Patrick E. McLean. For more information, visit succeedinevil.com. Chapter 8, A Giant Laser in Space. Topper had insisted on meeting Dr. Loeb. Edwin knew this was a risk. He was never quite sure what Topper was going to do. Most people could not surprise Edwin. In fact, Edwin felt that most people were so unimaginative and predictable that he could have created them from scratch. Their passions were small, their fallacies were obvious. But Topper was different. He was base, of course. But how and where Topper's enthusiasms would take him, Edwin never really knew.
"I am pleased to meet you,"
Dr. Loeb said in an accent that wandered from Southern to Austrian and back again with no rhyme or reason.
"What gives, Baldy?"
Topper said, jutting his chin out aggressively.
"Why are you talking like that? Aren't you supposed to be some kind of lowland Alabama redneck?"
Edwin winced. This was bad. The delicacy of the situation might not withstand this. But surprisingly, Dr. Loeb warmed right up to Topper.
"Oh, shit, man. I ain't gonna scare nobody talking like this, leastwise not trying to take over the world. Like, man, when you're dropping a guy in a shark tank, you can't say, 'Hey, man, feed that bitch them sharks over there.' You gotta say something cool like, 'Dispose of him.'"
In a moment of surprising vulnerability, Dr. Loeb looked to Edwin for confirmation.
"Right, man?"
"Yes," Edwin lied with visible strain. "Topper, if you'll excuse us." Topper did not move. He simply stared at Dr. Loeb. Dr. Loeb looked from side to side in an attempt to avoid the midget's withering glare, looking for a plant or a piece of furniture to hide behind.
"Dispose of him?"
Topper asked.
"Dispose of him?"
Dr. Loeb was uncomfortable and unsure, but he soldiered on anyway.
"Yeah, man, you know. Dispose of him! This instant!"
Topper's face slowly broadened into a smile.
"Yeah," he said. "Yeah, you're gonna be all right."
He slapped Dr. Loeb on the arm and made for the door. "Thank you, Topper. We do have plans to make." Dr. Loeb perked right up.
"Oh, man, a plotting and a scheming."
Both Edwin and Topper stared at Dr. Loeb as if a plant was growing out of his head. Topper motioned Edwin to lean down.
"Holy crap! He's as crazy as a fruit bat in a badminton net,"
he whispered as he left the room.
"Would it be okay if I talked in the evil accent some more?"
Dr. Loeb asked. Edwin forced a smile. "Whatever makes you comfortable."
"So, you have come to realize the wisdom of my plank?"
"Yes, your plan. The giant laser in space. There are difficulties, but the idea is not completely without merit." Edwin struggled to say it. He detested lying.
"What? You just put the Lazar in space?"
Yes, right there. You've touched on an interesting point. For the moment, we'll ignore the expense and near impossibility of constructing a laser in the megawatt range and focus on the transport issues. How exactly would you put it into space?"
"We would put it on the rocket."
"It's actually very expensive to put something on a rocket, and something as heavy as your death laser. You were planning on calling it a death laser or something like that, weren't you?"
"Laseradicator."
"Ah, yes, much more colorful. Something as heavy and substantial as a laseradicator." Edwin said this last word as if it was something awful that he could neither spit out nor swallow, and thus was simply forced to endure in his mouth. "Would assuredly require more than one rocket. That's multiple rockets, plus assembly once the parts are in space."
"So the space shuttle?"
Edwin wasn't getting his point across. "I think it is unlikely that NASA would be keen on helping you with your laser project."
"Laseradicator?"
"Yes, it's a fine name, but that's not the problem. No matter what you call it, you can't sneak it past NASA. And even if you could, it would cost you $10,000 per pound just to get your unbuildable laser into space." "How much does it weigh?"
"I don't know."
Edwin was encouraged by this response. It suggested that Dr. Loeb had not lost contact entirely with the reality that Edwin inhabited. "Yes, that's because it can't be built. Now I'm all for vision and daring, especially when these qualities are combined with patience and intelligence. But really, it's like this. You can find a solution to one impossible problem. But two impossible problems? The complexities don't add. They multiply. Dr. Loeb gave him a blank look. I'm saying it can't be done.
But I have a lot of money.
And you should keep it. Someday, you will have a good idea. That money will be used to finance it. Someday, Edwin thought, the day that never comes. He could see Eustace getting up another head of irrational steam and decided to bleed it off in another direction. Let's look at it this way. What would you do with your laser?
I would destroy Washington.
Why?
What do you mean? It's Washington.
Yes, and since the British burned it in 1814, it has remained inviolate and increasingly picturesque.
So?
So how do you plan to make money from destroying the capital of the United States of America?
Well, then I would be feared.
Then you would be broke. Having spent all your money on a laser and getting it into space, you would then destroy a perfectly good city and get nothing in return.
But...
All the motorboat noises in the world would not get Dr. Loeb out of this one. Edwin sat up straight. He folded his hands and pronounced stern judgment. Your business model is deeply flawed. I cannot see the benefit, much less the possibility, of a giant laser. For the first time during the whole session, Dr. Loeb did not have a ready and horribly ill-informed reply. He cocked his head in a look of inbred contemplation.
I don't know.
Ah, the glimmer of wisdom, said Edwin. So if I am to be of use to you at all, you're going to have to make me a small promise. Can you do that? Dr. Loeb nodded. You must promise me that, from now on, if we can't think of a good reason for you to do something, you won't do it.
What do you mean?
Well, let's try it another way. Why do you want to take over the world?
That's what I'm supposed to do. I'm a civilian.
Dr. Loeb said this like it was the most natural and obvious thing in the world.
I have a secret lair. I have this jacket, the right haircut. I am the evil mastermind.
Okay, right there. That's enough. In fact, it's too much. Let's say you took over the world.
Yes, I like this,
said Dr. Loeb, clapping his fat little hands together. You are lord and master of all creation, said Edwin.
Domination,
he said, nodding so vigorously his jowls seemed in danger of breaking free and rolling down his neck. What then? Dr. Loeb's mouth hung open. What good would it do to control the whole world?
But that's what I'm supposed to do.
Why?
Because, well, everybody knows this. The supervillain is to take over the world.
Yes, of course. But why?
What do you mean?
Well, it seems like a reasonable question. You're about to devote a considerable amount of your time and effort to reach a goal. It only seems prudent to ask if the goal is worthwhile. Dr. Loeb thought for a moment, and then proclaimed,
I did not become the villain, the supervillain I am, to be prudent.
Yes, that's good. That's the kind of thing that helps me. Now, Edwin leaned in to emphasize the importance of the question, why did you become a villain? Dr. Loeb had no idea. Edwin let him struggle with the question for a while. Of course, Edwin knew the answer. He had known long before Dr. Loeb sat down. The only question in Edwin's mind was, could he get Dr. Loeb to recognize the answer for what it was? It was a long shot, but if he could do it, well, then a world of possibilities would be created for both of them. You see, Dr. Loeb, by birth Eustace Eugene Riley III, was but a dilettante in the world of evil. A tourist, if you will. Or more precisely, a spoiled child who, by virtue of a sizable trust fund, had grown to become a very spoiled adult. But he had no sense of accomplishment. There are not many obstacles for the super-rich. There are precious few things that the young scion of a wealthy family can test his mettle upon. Eustace did not care for polo or sailing. He was a bad hand at business. Charity work didn't seem to suit him. But he had managed to find something to call his own. That it was ridiculous, absurd, and counterproductive was no detriment for Eustace. In fact, that had made evil even more attractive. Eustace's mother, Iphigenia Riley, was as controlling and as protective as they came, and, for good measure, shrewd and manipulative. Of course, her vices were greatly multiplied by the possession of a substantial fortune, so the widow Riley saw to it that her son had what the rich would refer to as a little money, but had denied him any substantial funds. Of course, Iphigenia loved her son unconditionally, but anything other than her love came with strings attached. If she had been given to introspection or self-knowledge of any kind, She would have realized that she would have been much happier with a child that had been genetically modified to remain an infant for its whole life. As it was, after Eustace hit puberty, she had consoled herself with a series of small furry dogs. So Eustace had been driven to more and more bizarre forms of rebellion in his efforts to get attention. But until now, he had dared not utter his most secret hope, a hope which Edwin meant to twist to his purpose. With all of his defenses and fantasies stripped away, Eustace dropped the accent and stopped trying to be something he wasn't. He spoke softly.
"I became a villain to get back at my mother." Edwin smiled. Now he was getting somewhere.
He did not often countenance revenge. There was rarely a profit in it. But Iphigenia Riley possessed a mind-boggling amount of money, more than enough to make it worth his while. For the first time in the interview, Edwin used Dr. Loeb's real name. "Now, Eustace, what would it be like when you have exacted your revenge?"
She'd have to do what I told her."
Eustace looked around nervously, as if he expected his mother to catch him in the middle of this confession. "Control. You would have control."
"Yes," he said. "Domination.
If you like to call it that. Domination," said Edwin. Eustace looked at Edwin with tears of gratitude welling up in his eyes. Then the fear came over him again.
"Can we really do it?"
Edwin was going to explain that if Eustace would listen to him and hire the right kind of lawyer, that they had a very good chance of success. But he was interrupted by an explosion at the back of the room.
"Mother!"
cried Eustace in terror. But as the dust settled and a light fixture crashed to the floor, Edwin was able to make out a figure at the other end of the room.
"It is I, Superlative Man!" cried the spandex-clad figure.
The place the hero had chosen to punch through the wall was right next to a door. Would the inanity never end? Edwin did not bother to answer that question for himself.
"He's come to do battle with me!"
Eustace cried with a note of joy in his voice.
"I am the villain, the sinister Dr. Loeb! And he must stop me. You take your life in your hands when you tangle with the fearsome intellect of Zilob."
Superlative man, is it? It's not clear that my client is guilty of breaking any laws.
"What are you trying to say? He's evil. Just look at him. No self-respecting or law-abiding citizen would dare dress like that. It is no matter. I'm evil. And he knows the evil I have done is nothing compared to the evil I will do next. And so, he must stop me before I strike again and achieve my plan of world domination. The only way to settle this is manful combat."
"Eustace, that is, Dr. Loeb, you might want to rethink this. He's got a good 40 pounds on you, and he just shouldered his way through a wall," Edwin said. But it was too late.
"Superlative! Into the fray!"
As the scuffle started, Edwin pushed his chair back from the table and reached for his phone. "Hello, Agnes? Yes, things are winding down in here. I'll need a full contract package." Dr. Loeb sailed through the air and slammed into the conference table in front of Edwin. "What was that?" Yes, absolutely. Accidental death and dismemberment waivers. And prompt medical attention. Thank you." Edwin hung up the phone with an air of self-satisfaction. One more well-timed action, and the day's work would be done. For all his brave posturing, things weren't going well for Dr. Loeb. He was pinned under Superlative Man's knee. In pain and distress, Eustace gave up on all pretense. An uninterrupted stream of Lower Alabama profanity poured forth from Eustace's slobbering gobhole. Such filth, thought Edwin. Such a remarkable knowledge of the anatomy of farm animals. Superlative wrenched Dr. Loeb's arm hard against his socket.
"Yield, villain! Yield!"
The shoulder let go with a sickening crunch. The profanity dropped off to a whimper. What a relief, thought Edwin. And then he produced a small nickel-plated pistol from his desk drawer and shot Superlative Man in the leg. Superlative Man cried out in shock and surprise. The blood drained from his face as he collapsed on the floor.
"You shot me,"
he said in disbelief. Edwin didn't usually dignify the obvious with a response, but this time he could not resist. Correct. Dr. Loeb looked up through a haze of pain, his arm sticking out from behind his back at an absurd angle. Before he lost consciousness, he said,
"Thank you."
Edwin replaced the gun in the drawer. "No thanks required. It will be added to your bill."
"You have been busy," said Agnes.
She stood in the doorway, surveying the carnage.
"Is that the tang of cordite in the air? Destructive meeting, I trust?"
No. Excellent meeting. However, it's left Dr. Loeb in need of medical attention.
And what shall we do with the other poor unfortunate?
Agnes dialed 911 as she spoke. Edwin looked down at the man in the costume. Superlative man. Of course, he was no superhero. There was nothing superlative about him whatever. He was merely an out-of-work actor trying to earn some extra cash. Edwin felt a stirring of some unidentifiable emotion. Not pity. Of course not pity. Whatever it was, he put it from his mind. That should be handled with more discretion, said Edwin. No doubt when the actor returned to consciousness, he would be terribly upset about being shot. But page 14 of the contract had been clear about extraordinary circumstances. Was it Edwin's fault if the actor believed the death and dismemberment waiver was in there solely because the pyrotechnics used to breach the wall for his entrance? How often people changed their minds about agreements after they had been made, and almost always for their own convenience. Edwin did not approve of violence. It was too unpredictable, too hard to control. But a way had been needed to earn Dr. Loeb's trust, beyond all question. Still, Edwin could not help but feel that somehow he had fallen short. He's bled rather a lot, Edwin observed. Agnes covered the phone with her hand and said,
Yes, dear, that is my next phone call. Unfortunately, 911 does not dispatch carpet cleaning services.
Agnes paused thoughtfully.
But when you think of it, excuse me, do you?
And an outraged squawking came through the phone.
Well then, we'll just have the ambulance.
Agnes hung up the phone.
You see, this is precisely what happens when you do not take the time to enforce and develop a quality serving class. That woman was unapologetically rude. I will never understand why such a bright, sensitive man as yourself has chosen to make this savage country your home.
It's where the work is, said Edwin. And now it seems I must go to Alabama.
Heavens, no! Edwin, I forbid you to go.
Edwin looked at her.
Of course, what I mean to say is...
I know what you mean to say. It will be fine, Edna.
I predict disaster.
Yes, my dear, but you always predict disaster. You have long called for the downfall of Western civilization.
No, no, Edwin. Not calling for. Bemoaning, bewailing, Cassandra crying out in the savage wilderness of America.
You've been listening to How to Succeed in Evil by Patrick E. McLean. For more information, visit succeedinevil.com.